And so it does become a very difficult situation. And the reality is that that's the situation we're dealing with. As we are working with more and more employers, the demand is simply increasing, or at least the potential for demand. You know, sometimes I'll go weeks without hearing from any employers, and then 2 weeks ago I came into work and I had 4 messages from 3 different employers, you know. And all of a sudden, what I had planned for that day was completely out the window. And it just kind of had, actually that particular week kind of snowballed from there. And I ended this past week still not really recovered from that. And again, it's because there aren't a lot of other additional resources that I can send out to that particular task. And so I guess if we can help employers recognize that we're a resource but not necessarily be dependent on us, and help them become aware of other resources and help other resources develop that would be valuable to them, I think that in the long run that will help us. And so again, getting back to guidelines and defining that, or at least establishing kind of expectations up front, I think will help. You know, one of the things we like to do is we like to kind of make these promises to employers that say, we'll give you all the support you need, you know, because we really think that this is a great opportunity, and, you know, whatever needs to be done, we're going to help you do. Well, we can kind of shoot ourselves in the foot by doing that, because if we've done that to half the employers in the state, what happens when on the week when, you know, half of those call us? We can't respond. And so all of a sudden, you know, that promise we made is kind of not very valuable to them because it's an empty promise. So it's not that we want to go to employers and say, we will no longer provide this service, or we are not willing to do this, but we will do that. You know, we don't want to have that kind of an attitude, but we also don't want to be putting ourselves into a situation where we're making promises that we can't fulfill, because that doesn't put us in any better position and doesn't put blind people in any better position. So, but any suggestions that anybody has regarding employer guidelines, I'm welcome to hear, you know, I welcome them, because it's something that is kind of a difficult area to work on. And that's exactly what I've been doing lately, is, you know, saying, look, you know, this is, I'd love to help you out, but it's going to be Wednesday before I can get out there. Yeah, Wednesday, you know, in July, but no. And I have had to, a lot of it's just discipline of myself. I have to make sure that, you know, I'm not being unequitable in terms of how I respond, because that gets difficult too. That's another reason why guidelines are good. It helps keep us kind of evenly spread in terms of our commitments. But the bottom line is, if it's a situation that I know I'm familiar with, but the vendor is not, and I know that if that vendor goes out there, the problem is probably not going to be resolved in an efficient manner. This employer is probably going to end up spending money and not getting the results they needed. Or it's going to mean an investment of my time to bring the vendor up to speed so they can provide a quality service to this employer. And in the meantime, this individual is not able to perform their job. I don't have a lot of option other than to get out there and fix it. So that's the situation I find myself in. You know, not every day, but frequently.
We've worked so hard to build skills with blind people and get them employed. And I think it's should be our first responsibility to keep that person working. And if they have downtime for 2 days, waiting for you to get there, that employer's gonna be upset with that too. And you gotta, so I just think keeping blind people working should be a priority.
I agree with that, and that's why it is a difficult situation, because how do I begin to steer employers towards an attitude of less dependence on us without, you know, I mean, how do I respond quickly to a situation? Let me back up again. I guess if I respond quickly to a situation, it further, you know, ingrains that attitude of dependence on us, okay?
Where would they go for other help, though?
Well, and that's another issue. There isn't a lot out there in terms of other resources.
So we're it. So we're in a double bind.
We are. And one of the things that I've always tried to do ever since I've been working here is when I'm working with an employer in setting up a new, brand new situation in particular, I really strive to get somebody from their organization involved so that they are understanding what we're doing in terms of setting things up, in terms of the accommodations that we're making, and so they can be aware of the resources that I'm using in order to get things put into place. That's going to put them in a better position to seek out some of that on their own. Problem we run into is very rarely do these people stick around, especially if I'm dealing with IT people. There's such a high turnover that, you know.
What do you mean IT?
Information technology people. So if I'm working with the IT manager of a particular employer, by the time a problem arises 3 months down the road, the person that has some knowledge of the situation is long gone, and they've got no choice but to come back to us. So I don't know what the best solution is. And again, that's why they're not written yet.
Madam Chair, please.
Yes.
This is Petra. You know, I agree employment is very crucial for blind individuals, and that's what we get the federal money for. Also, it is important, I guess, as Jonathan said, to see our role. If it is, I mean, we are doing rehabilitation, not helping an employee in court. I mean, if it is resetting a computer, I mean, it's computer related, not training related, I think either they can go and get another resource or, you know, pay us to do that. So I think there's a difference between train the client or helping the client to make the equipment accessible for that client and make sure it's working, then employer, let's say, changing the system and asking help them.
This is Jonathan again. And Patosh, you mentioned something in there about them paying us. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of the ideas that I've had also is, you know, moving that attitude away from, well, this is a free service that we've received, or this is, you know, something that this state agency came in and did for us, so we don't really have any ownership in this. Turning it more into an idea of letting them understand that this is a valued service that they should be responsible for paying for, just as they would any other service that they pay for. Now, certainly initially when we're trying to establish a relationship and help them understand that this is a good situation for them, sending them a bill is not a good way to do that. Okay?
No.
But in a case where it's an employer that we've got an established relationship with, but perhaps the individual that it concerns is not actually a client of ours anymore, I don't see there would be any reason why we couldn't say, hey, we can be that resource, and this is our fee. Okay? The thinking behind that is that starts building back some of our resources, because right now we spread our resources thinner, but we don't ever recoup any of that in terms of technology. The problem with that approach, though, is it really would not generate enough income to address the resource issue. It might give us a few more dollars and cents in the budget, but not enough dollars and cents to really increase the resources, particularly the hour resources or the time resources in terms of manpower or person power.
This is Dorothy again. Jonathan, just playing devil's advocate though, why would the employer keep that blind person working then if they have to go to a bigger expense? You know, I mean, they should, but realistically, are they going to do that?
I think yes, and this is the reason why. If they have an individual that's performing the job to their specifications, the amount of money we'd be talking in terms of maintaining some equipment is far less than the amount of investment they would have to rehire and retrain another individual.
Madam Chairperson?
Yes.
This is Fatosh. Actually, they are paying probably the same or more amount to their sighted employers. I mean, if their computer system is doing something wrong, they call somebody from outside to come and fix it, and they pay for it for other employers. So, I mean, I'm not saying that let's do it from the first day, but if it is, we have a relationship with that company and we give service for a year, the client is no longer our client, then we can say we will provide free services for a year, but after that, you're going to purchase our service. I think the value of our service and the value of that client will be even more if we do that. Like anybody else.
This is Jonathan again. I agree with that, Fatosh. I think that whole idea moves them out of that line of thinking of they're doing something charitable.
Exactly.
And I really think that overall, I guess what I was trying to say is the financial benefit to the commission, to be honest, would not be that great. I don't imagine. But moving employers into a different mindset, I think would be much more valuable than any money we would bring in. So,
Madam Chairman,
I think that's true, and I think that a lot of times when we set ourselves up to be afraid to lose a job rather than to get one and keep it, then it does things within our own minds and approaches too. And I think that this kind of thing would take not only the potential employer or whoever that is into that different mindset, but it would also be a part of the individual person who's receiving the services and then being not a client anymore or whatever. It takes that person into that mindset also, and causes everybody to begin to look for other kinds of resources and a bigger network base. And I think that's a good idea. Hubert?
Yep, this is Hubert. Jonathan, when the employers call you for assistance, has there been any indication whether you're their first call or have they tried calling their local computer shop?
It depends on the employer, and it depends on what the situation is. I mean, sometimes we'll get calls that it boils down to it's not really even anything to do with the adaptive technology. In those cases, I certainly refer them back to their own people and say, well, this is what you probably need to have them check out. I'll give them an idea of what to look at. Sometimes I'll get calls and they'll say, you know, Bob from Computer Services came down and looked and we can't figure out what's going on. We think it must be something to do with JAWS. You know, I get calls like that occasionally too.
Has there been any thought of somebody doing some in-service with some of the communities with the computer shops there to just kind of give them an introduction to JAWS or the other technologies, and so they don't throw up their hands and when they have a case offered to them?
Yeah, actually there's been a lot of thought, but
expands.
We have no way of taking action on that idea, because even just the time, I mean, you know, and also each situation is enough different from the other ones that it's kind of difficult to do any sort of general education for them.
Well, my experience has been too. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Were you done?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. One of the things I've experienced in getting tech support is if you can find somebody who begins to get to know what your situation is, sometimes if they stick around long enough, you can start asking for that particular person. And if somebody else there wants to know why are you wanting that particular person, you can tell them, you know, well, you know, we've talked about this stuff and you know, that person seems to be getting it. And when I just do the general tech support thing, whoever I just happen to end up with doesn't necessarily. That gets some of them thinking too, you know, that there was at least one occasion where the person said, well, I'm willing to try to get it, as you say, you know, what are you, what are you talking about?
Well, did they get it?
And so that, you know, the good news about that was that then there were two people that, you know.
I'm getting it.
And so I think part of that too is how we can, as users of technology and those who go to these tech support people, you know, how we can help try to cultivate them ourselves too. You know, if we're on a certain job and there's a help desk, we can try to get to know those people and have them, you know, help them to want to help us, help them to want to make that an interesting part of their day.
Is it very fruitful for them to call Freedom Scientific and their tech support?
It can be. You know, again, it just depends on what the situation is and the problems that arise come in all different shapes and sizes.
But I mean, shouldn't that be their first call?
I think it should be, and that's one of the things that we need to encourage them to do is first contact the vendor. And that's one of the things that's kind of outlined in the guidelines for individuals too is, you know, my first question is, have you called Freedom Scientific about this? Mm-hmm. Or have you called, you know, GW Micro or AI Squared or whatever the vendor is for the product or manufacturer?
Yes, thank you. I'd also like to add that although we haven't done formal workshops and trainings for people, we certainly are alert to situations where we can provide some, you know, as we work with the individual information technology person in the business to, you know, really help provide them with the resource numbers, but also some of the basics. And some of those folks are, you know, they're very sharp and this is their field. And so learning this other piece is just another software, really. And yep. I mean, mm-hmm. So, and as an example, there was a call I received from an online, or an internet provider in central Nebraska. And he started out saying, I'd like to know why the commission refuses services to people who had services before. And so we kind of got around, what is it you're asking? The individual was there with the provider, and I guess there had been some new version, some updates to the internet situation or that the software that was being used, and the individual, as was his custom through many years in the past, would always just call the agency and say, okay, I need you to come now. And so what we did, we talked with the individual and with the provider, and the provider was very interested in meeting with Jan Brandt, learning enough about speech access so that then they, as the internet provider, could provide the service to their customer. And so, you know, I mean, it does occur in a less systematic way, but across the state. I think that all of our staff, the technology and all the staff, are very alert to opportunities for, you know, that teaching moment where they can bring people up to speed, whether it's a business owner or a technology provider of some sort, you know, so.
And a couple, I mean, there are some examples of some bigger employers where that has happened, where they've taken on enough of interest that they went out and, you know, have done their own thing as far as keeping up with the updates and the changes. And I've heard very little from them in recent years.
Excuse me, Jonathan.
Yes.
I was just thinking, you know, a lot of companies have their tech support learn JAWS and speech, you know, output and all that stuff. Like my son is a technology manager for UPS, and he's in 20 years he's worked for UPS, he's never had one blind person apply for a job with him. And he's been in Nebraska, Minnesota, now in Kansas. And I just think that's so unusual. And he's, you know, became interested in JAWS and that on his own, and his employer sent him to school to learn that.
Is there been any thought, I mean, you know, to people that are past clients, you know, out and and, you know, like to have workshops, and, you know, even to charge. I mean, I know I myself would, you know, to basically someone that's really cutting edge on a, you know, JAWS or, you know, open book or whatever, and, you know, to conduct a, you know, half-day workshop or something and invite, you know, basically where people, because, you know, like you said, there's a limited number of resources out there, and especially people that are employed and on the go. I mean, you know, to keep up with, you know, the cutting edge of the changes and things, that it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, you got to battle the learning curve and everything. It'd be real beneficial to, I mean, you know, if you look at, you know, the sighted world, I mean, keeping up with the different technologies, I mean, there's workshops all the time. I mean, that's just in common sense for people to keep up. And I just wondered if, you know, there's limited resources and time and such, but if there had been any thought to doing some kind of workshop for people to come in. And, you know, I think it'd be reasonable to charge.
For their continuing education.
This is Jonathan. And to answer your question, yes. I mean, that's something that I would love to be able to do. And one of the problems that we would have with doing that is where to do it, the facility, and also the time. But certainly, I think that would be a great idea to offer a workshop, you know. And we have done a number of things where vendors come in, typically at their request, but sometimes at our request, and provide, like, some free, you know, introductions to their new products and those sorts of things. But as far as, like, saying, okay, we're going to offer a class on, you know, using Internet Explorer with Window Eyes, okay, and have people sign up to come in, and we do a day or day and a half or however long the class is going to be, and then having them charge, you know, charging for it, I think that would be a wonderful idea, and it's something I would love to do. That's, I love teaching classes, groups of, you know, 4 to 5 people.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You know, when the people come from different vendors, and I attended, you know, several of them, part of their job is to sell the product. Mm-hmm. And it gets kind of, one or 2 hours of dealing with why my product is the best type of deal rather than training. One of the difficulty is, and I attend other technology training sessions, is the level of the people coming. It differs so, I mean, one person is different than the other person, their knowledge and their background. Some people come starting from the beginning, some people come knowing a lot. So you need to have set different classes, like beginners and advanced, and so you get into that problem too.
This is Carol. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to comment. We have talked about doing, you know, more regular workshops for individuals. We've also talked about having workshops and that business owners would come to, and, you know, for charging a fee and so on. The challenge is always, who's going to do it? How are we going to do it? And it sounds like, okay, a one day, a half day workshop shouldn't be that big of a deal. You know the stuff, so just do it. Well, the logistics, the setup, all the planning involved, putting materials together, I mean, it really is something that would take a lot of time, and it's something we would love to do. We've discussed it. We would love to do this. I think businesses would really pay well to come to some things like this. And for individuals, you know, in the past we've done various kinds of workshops, but to have regular computer training, to have a lab, I mean, part of it's the physical access, physical place, as Jonathan mentioned, but that just the time in putting the thing together and then doing it.
Yeah.
Right now, as Jonathan said, we're just really reassessing all of, I mean, we're already having difficulty meeting the needs that were, you know, are on our desk every every second. So, you know, yes, there has been thought, yes, we want to do it. Yes, it's in the hopper for things that we, at some point, can make happen.
Well, I think what would be neat is if it could be done, you know, for blind people to network and user groups and,
yeah,
you know, but you know, we don't know each other, you know, we know some of each other, but we don't know, and if, you know, it almost would need to be done through the commission focus, because that's kind of the general unifier, that, because a lot of people, individuals, have learned and discovered techniques and things and just sharing, you know, like it sounds like Glenn, you know, sends a lot of stuff out. I mean, that's that. There needs to be networks like that in the blind community all over, and whatever we can do to facilitate that, you know, the better. I mean, if Glenn's got great stuff he's sending around, heck, I'll throw my name on the on his network or his tree that he's sending stuff, because there's a lot of neat stuff out there. And if you have the time to play around and learn it, it's you know, there's amazing neat stuff that you know, a lot of people don't know about.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Nancy.
This is probably a more on a personal level, but I'm just curious as to where I need to go. And I think, you know, Bob's idea, and as Pearl says, the logistics of doing it isn't the fact that you don't want to, it's just, you know, the logistics of doing it. But, you know, you get a little frustrated as a user. I just recently, last fall, upgraded to a new computer. And while I did that, obviously did the upgrade JAWS, and I did the upgrade to the open book. And while I was waiting for the open book thing to come, Jan Brand sent me a copy of 6.0 Arkenstone to use, the open book version. And I was getting along fine, other than you couldn't turn off the tones, which, you know, drives you nuts. It just worked beautifully. I couldn't believe how much faster it was and all this. And now I have gotten the 7.0, installed it. I have spent 3 hours on the phone to various technicians down at Freedom Scientific, and I have a major problem with it. I mean, every time I scan something, about 95% of the time, it will immediately tell me, send, don't send, where it wants to send a mistake message to Microsoft. And I mean, that's so frustrating that you can't, because, you know, if I translate the whole whatever I've scanned over to Microsoft Word, then I can read it. But it's just, you know, having to do that each and every time, especially if it's just a postcard or some silly advertisement that I just want to get a look at to see, you know, what it is. So my question is, you know, is there any possibility, like individuals, and I know that you guys, your caseload is huge, and I'm not a client, but I wonder if there's a possibility, like, for me to pay somebody to physically come out and really see what the problem is, because I have a feeling in the back of my head that it's just something minor that has been changed. And I mean, those guys down at Freedom Scientific, they helped me uninstall, we reinstalled, we changed this setting, we changed that setting. I mean, I literally was on the phone 3 hours talking to about four different guys. They came up with character recognition was the problem. But if I'm going to have character recognition problems 95% of the time, I'm not very happy when the 6.0 didn't do that. So I know this is no time to talk about personal problems, but my question is, you know, what resources or where do I go now? What do I do since I've talked to those guys and I came up with nothing?
And that's a good question.
But part of our plan is that we did talk about putting together a resource list, because there are knowledgeable people in the state and elsewhere who would work with an individual on a for pay basis. So that's a nugget of what we're working on.
Yeah, there are some resources out there, and like Pearl just said, we want to kind of compile that so it's in a format that people can get to and know, okay, who can I call in my area?
Okay. I would be very interested in getting hold of anybody at this point, because it's very frustrating to me, because I do a lot of scanning of things for various reasons, a whole lot of things that I want to keep track of. And I was so pleased with the 6.0 demo thing that I was just thrilled. You know, within 10 seconds between scanning to reading, 10 seconds. I mean, it was just amazing, but now I'm very frustrated.
Chair, Robert.
Okay, Robert and then Patoche.
So I think we all know the importance of, you know, peers and that sort of thing. And we've kind of said it here today. I guess I just wanted to bring it back to this for a second, or put the focus on this for a second. But, you know, and we've, the commission's done it some. It's okay. So we have the NFP and we have the ACP. And not only do we have state conventions that go on, but we also have monthly chapter meetings. And there's chapters in quite a few of the larger communities. So what about just like maybe some of the chapters have little workshops? Because they all have some people within their membership that have the expertise. It'd be a way to get ACB and NFB more, you know, involved in the community and maybe potential members, and just, again, the whole networking thing. Just maybe try to get down to some individual chapters doing some things within their communities.
And you don't forget the VIPs.
Well, yeah. Well, sure, there's folks there, too. Thanks, yeah.
Well, like, you know, put together an alumni club or group for people who've gone through the center, and that would be a, you know, natural. People have gone through there and gone out and worked, and to do some networking. Well, and the key is, you know, to be able to find people to network with is part of the issue.
This is John.
Excuse me, Patoche.
And I do not know if this is possible technically, but we can use our website. I don't see why not. There will be a link there that people will send an email to ask questions, and the people who know the answer will post it there.
That's a good idea.
And that will also have blind people and others to use our website and know more about how we do things and what our agency is about, too.
This is Jonathan. So you're suggesting like a bulletin board,
yes,
or news group type?
Yeah.
And there are actually groups like that already in existence.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with them is sometimes they tend to be a little overwhelming to the average user.
Yeah, like me.
And also, people can give their phone numbers, I mean, so we can call each other if they're willing to problem solve on the phone, or even if they're in the same area, willing to get together and mentor each other. You cannot do that, you know, from out of state.
Yeah. This
well,
is John.
Yeah, to some degree, I mean, you can do a, do searches for those kinds of things. I mean, if you mm-hmm. don't care where you hear back from people from.
I was just going to say that it does come back, though, to a really valid concern, which is, where do I go for support? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you can network with your peers and do all sorts of things, but if I have a problem with my computer at home, I've got a phone book full of places I can take it to, and if it's a mainstream issue, I don't need to go to somebody specialized. I've got a zillion choices of where I can take it to, and it's going to be fixed. And that resource just isn't as prevalent for adaptive technology because adaptive technology isn't used as widely. And so, you know, what we mentioned the list of possible providers that we'd like to put together in different communities, and, you know, some of those may be people that are wanting to volunteer sometimes. Some of them might be people that are wanting to negotiate a fee with the individual, you know, whatever the case may be, because there are some people out there that have the time and the initiative that they want to kind of do the work to figure out the problem and solve it, and there are people that want to just have somebody come in and fix it.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a resource for those people,
right.
You know, and
that's what I'd like.
It puts us as a technology team in a little bit of a dilemma, because when do we draw the line? You know, we know that they just want it fixed, and we know that we have the knowledge to just fix it. And so we're constantly bombarded with this kind of weighing the situation and trying to figure out which way do we go. And that's why some of these guidelines are so important for us. Unfortunately, because we need to conserve our resources and use them appropriately, what it really comes down to is cutting some of those people off. And I'm not real comfortable with that situation, but there isn't really a better answer at this point. you know? And I don't know, I mean, it's hard for me, when I know that I am a resource that could solve their problem, to steer them somewhere else, where I know they're gonna be on a wild goose chase, where they may or may not get the answer. But I'm simply in a position where I don't really have any other choice.
Well, I think some of it goes to, and you know, there are, and I know sometimes I just, you know, just fix it, but you know, we all have to be problem solvers, and you know, I mean, it's, and we just, and it's more imperative than ever that with this adaptive technology issue where we don't have as good of access, that the part of the use of adaptive technology is learning some problem solving skills, being able to call Freedom Scientific and manage their, you know, working with them, and just keep insisting, you know, that you know, they get you the answer, and it's, you know, part of that I think is goes with us using adaptive technology, that we have to realize that it's, you know, we are a little bit more on our own, and instill in us some willingness to try some problem solving other than just, you know, call a real limited resource, which is you, Jonathan, and you should be a last call rather than a first, and I guess that would free up your time more if that was the case, if you were the last call instead of the first.
And that's, again, what these guidelines try to address, is just having that be kind of just making sure that people are aware of sort of the steps to take to resolve the situation instead of immediately coming to us.
Well, in case in point, Barbara, if I can jump in, Jimmy Rock, case in point that I elaborated to earlier, and Jonathan, you were here. Last Sunday, I had an email, and I think I copied you and Pearl and Bob on it about the problems I was having updating the webpage with the title page. Case in point, Jonathan sent back an email, said, this is what you need to do to fix it. I thought, I'll be damned. And it worked, just like that. So, yeah, you are a good asset to the agency, and it's too bad there's not about four or five of you, you know, that can go around.
That's cloning.
It's a federal law that... Anyway, yeah, I mean, that title thing worked, just like you.
Good.
And I'm sure it's constantly looked at as far as, you know, counselor, you know, but when you get right down to it, how, you know, the people, the successful employment outcomes, how many of them use technology, and maybe we just, you know, have to, you know, the commission just has to devote more resources to technology and is at the expense of other things. I mean, unless you get more money, then there's always a trade-off, but maybe that's, and I'm sure that's something that's constantly looked at, but
sure.
But
you know, when we used to really just have one official, we had some others that kind of did, you know, were inclined that way, one official technology person, then we were able to add the one in Omaha, added to Lincoln, and then actually the way we got the one for the North Platte district is that Patoche came along and we decided, well, gee, she could be the center director and the Braille teacher, so let's take that other position and turn it into a technology person and plunk the position down in the North Platte district. And so that seemed like a wonderful solution at the time, and was, and I mean, that's just kind of where, how we got to where we are today from before. Then now we're looking at, we need more technology people. Three isn't enough, but we also need a full-time center director and a full-time Braille instructor. So it's, you know, definitely something we continue to look at and figure out how can we build our capacity. And so.
This is Jonathan. I just to clarify, because the position that we have, we actually took a orientation counselor position and had that upgraded to
a program specialist.
Step.
No, what I'm talking about.
That's how we got the third, though.
What I'm talking about is when we hired you.
Okay,
we still
that had was.
Dale Hayes, and we hired Jonathan.
Okay.
And then the third I was talking about was the hiring of Jan Brandt, creating the technology position out there.
But that actually, what if I remember correctly, what actually occurred? Jan actually when I took the position that was formerly in Lincoln, that freed up my position to move there. And then the third position, the one that then populated the Lincoln office, was an upgrade in position.
It was an upgrade.
So it was actually my position that was created by eliminating the Braille instructor. But I just got confused when you said that, because I didn't know, I remember wrong.
It must have been when we made your position.
Yeah, I think it was then.
So then what's Nancy talking about?
She is a technology specialist, she's a program specialist.
She was a person who was a home teacher and was doing technology almost 90% of her job, and so we upgraded the position.
Yeah.
So at this point, the biggest difficulty, if you, if, you know, if we were to try to prioritize or boil it down, if we were going to be able to do something different, would the priority, as you see it, be to have another person working in that job, in addition to those of you who already are? Or would it be to really get behind this notion of helping employers and individuals who are being served to get a different perspective on what the commission's role is based on the guidelines?
I think, given our current resources available, the latter needs to be the priority, because we don't have the resources currently to look at adding a position.
Mm-hmm.
But even that effort of helping to grow and facilitate the growth of community resources takes resources. And so it's something that we've talked about doing, but nothing has had a chance to really, nothing of any substance can really happen, because we're still too overwhelmed to work towards that. It's kind of a catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until we move those resources into that task, it's not going to get any better. But because it's not any better, we can't free up the resources to work on that task.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess to, I really see there being a need for both. Adding a one position, adding two positions, still is not going to solve the problem. That other aspect of, you know, building the community resources, helping to kind of change the, you know, the attitude so that people are looking towards those resources instead of towards the commission, that has to happen along with whatever else we do in terms of adding to our resources. Because there's enough of a need out there that's going unmet that, you know, any resources we add will get sucked up immediately, so.
Pearl, I think you were next.
Yeah, I was going to add that building of the changing of the role and the expectation and such, that can be done and, you know, in a sense, being, or, you know, needs to be done by all of us. You know, it's not just the technology people that are working with the individual blind people and the community resources and the businesses. So all of us have to have that perspective. And the work that Jonathan has reporting to you, these guidelines and discussions, is from a committee of staff, not just the technical people. And it is something that, as a whole, we're working on kind of changing the way we all think. The other thing that I wanted to mention in this context is the level of funding that we have from the Older Blind Grant will almost certainly be quite a bit higher from now on, if we ever get our budget. And so we've been looking at a lot of different ways of how should we best use those funds. And one of the things we're doing right now is to look at the actual amount of time that the field staff are spending in work with groups and, you know, and work with individuals that are older, and find out if there's ways that we could, like, add a person from the Older Blind Grant that then could sort of take up some of those duties that the basic support grant is paying for, and then thus